Good morning. My name is Robert, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to Vesta's second quarter 2015 earnings conference call. Vesta issued its quarterly report on Thursday, July 23, 2015. If you did not receive a copy via email, please do not hesitate to contact the company at +52 55 5950 0070. Before we begin the call today, I'd like to remind you that forward-looking statements made during today's teleconference do not account for future economic circumstances, industry conditions, company performance, and financial results. These statements are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties. All figures included herein were prepared in accordance with IFRS and are stated in nominal U.S. dollars unless otherwise noted. Joining us today from Vesta in Mexico City is Lorenzo Dominique Bejo Carranza, the Chief Operating Officer, Juan Sotil, the CFO, and Iga Walska, the Investor Relations Officer. And now I'd like to turn the call over to Mr. Bejo. Sir, please begin.
Thank you very much, Rob, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for your interest in Vesta and for participating in today's conference call. Vesta is deeply committed to maintaining our high rate of growth and achieving a sustainable competitive advantage by realizing the Vesta Vision 2020 growth plan. We are therefore developing stronger internal processes and better products for our clients. We call this process Innovesting, which is where innovation and strategy meet at Vesta. Having built an industrial real estate portfolio in the fastest growing regions of Mexico, we are now at the forefront of the industry's growth wave and ready to capture this demand with more efficient and competitive solutions. Innovation is at the heart of this strategy. In anticipation of rising demand, Vesta is being proactive with world-class industrial facilities ready to lease that are adaptable to client requirements, well-located and competitively priced. Our park-to-suit development integrate necessary supply chain processes or cluster needs with the best infrastructure. Backed by our best-in-class approach to customer service, we also provide an experienced legal framework, negotiating experience, development planning and execution, and park management solutions, so our clients can focus on their core business. In line with our Vesta Vision 2020 growth plan, we are transforming our company with a new corporate structure and long-term management incentive plan, underpinned by a strong balance sheet and track record of high client retention and satisfaction. In the first half of 2015, our portfolio grew 1.4 million square feet, representing a major growth period in our history, to reach 18.2 million square feet overall. It is vital we maintain this momentum in order to have facilities available for future clients. Very importantly, the recovery in the United States and the relatively stronger currency positions Mexico more competitively as a global manufacturing hub. Low inflation, a skilled and competitively priced labor force, proximity to the United States, and ongoing implementation of energy reforms are attracting world-class companies to establish manufacturing facilities in the country. From a broader economic perspective, as the United States economy continues to strengthen, interest rate expectations have risen, increasing volatility in capital markets. Nevertheless, the strong fundamentals in Mexico's industrial real estate sector underpin our bright outlook. Foreign direct investment in Mexico has risen more than 30% to $7.6 billion, with the United States accounting for nearly 60% of this. According to the first quarter figures, the automotive sector represented nearly 54% of foreign direct investment, as the advantages that we have outlined triggered GM, Ford, Toyota, Honda, Volkswagen, Audi, BMW, Hyundai, and Mazda to select Mexico as their manufacturing platform for North America and the world. I am happy to share strong second quarter results, which are a testament to our ability to execute on our strategy. During the second quarter, our additional capacity with new properties saw an expansion in GLA of 3.68% versus the first quarter. As a result, our total vacancy rate rose to 14.9%, with the same-store vacancy rate declining to 10.2% as of June 30, 2015. Vesta has historically rented new buildings within approximately 6 months, and we therefore expect vacancy rates to normalize in coming months. Funds from operations increased more than 66% year over year to $10.9 million in the second quarter. Revenues increased 14.4% to $19.3 million. Net operating income rose 15.5% to $18.6 million, representing a margin of 96.5%. And EBITDA rose 21.7% to $16.6 million, equaling a margin of 86.2%. We are proud to celebrate our third anniversary as a public company this month, noting growth of 60% in our gross leasable area and 44.3% in last 12 months revenues to reach $75 million as we improve our financial efficiency. This growth reflects our best-in-class corporate culture, which focuses on building long-term customer relationships. We thank you for your continued trust and support, and look forward to building our strong track record of growth. I will now hand the call over to our CFO, Juan Sotil, for a discussion of our second quarter results.
Thank you, Lorenzo. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today to discuss our results for the second quarter of 2015. We are pleased to report strong results for the period, with solid expansion in our portfolio and double-digit growth across all key financial metrics during the second quarter. Our total gross leasable area increased by approximately 630,000 square feet over the 3 months to June to reach 18.2 million square feet. Overall, this expansion extends a period of strong growth in Vesta's history and is in line with our plan to double the size of the company by the end of the year 2020. During the quarter, we signed new leases for inventory buildings in Toluca, San Luis Potosí, Tijuana, Silao, Aguascalientes, and global companies in industries, including medical devices, automotive, and logistics. We also renewed or released more than 1 million square feet of our portfolio, which equates to 68% of leases expiring this year. Looking ahead to our expirations for 2016, we also renewed about 14% of the leases that expire next year. The increase in our portfolio size saw a rise in our vacancy rate to 14.9 from 12.4, due mainly to the completion of inventory buildings in Querétaro and Tlaxcala. We expect to lease these buildings in the coming months as demand for industrial real estate in Mexico remains strong. It is vital for us to stay ahead of the needs of our customers, and we expect our vacancy rate to soon normalize. In the second quarter, we made progress in the construction of 9 buildings, representing a total GLA of more than 2 million square feet and investments of $108.5 million. Regarding our financial results, we achieved a strong growth in revenues, net operating income, EBITDA, and funds from operations during the quarter. Revenues increased 14.4% over year to $19.3 million as we were successful in renting new properties. As more than three-quarters of our rental contracts are in U.S. dollars, the majority of our revenues are protected from the peso decline versus the U.S. currency. Most of our costs, on the other hand, are in pesos. This dynamic has helped boost our margins. More broadly, the peso ongoing decline continues to make Mexico appealing as a global manufacturing destination for offshore companies. Vesta lean cost structure is reflected in low operating costs, which rose over 1% on the second quarter against the prior corresponding period. Vesta's board of directors is committed to a strong corporate government practice and set very challenging targets for our executive management based on shareholder returns. On the mark-to-market of these compensation metrics, total expense was lower in the second quarter, benefiting administrative costs. Net operating income rose 15.5% over the same period in 2014 to $18.6 million, with economies of scale helping to lift the NOI margin 90 basis points to 96.5%. For the second quarter, EBITDA rose 21.7% to $16.6 million, while EBITDA margin increased 520 basis points to 86.2% from 81% over the second quarter of 2014. Income before tax doubled to $44.1 million from $22.1 million in the same quarter last year. This resulted in a net operating profit of $20 million for the quarter, up from $15 million in the year-ago period. Similarly, the second quarter funds from operations were robust, raising 66% year-over-year to $10.9 million. Regarding our balance sheet, Vesta cash and cash equivalents were $275.8 million at the end of the second quarter. Operating activities generated cash flow of $15.8 million during the period. The overbalance of debt as of June was $349.1 million. As a reminder, all of our debt is denominated in dollars. Vesta's strong second quarter results are a testament to the success of our business model. We are confident on our ongoing expansion as we execute the Vesta Vision 2020 growth plan against a backdrop of Mexico rising appeal as a manufacturing hub. We are focused on the fastest growing markets in Mexico and are strengthening our value offering through sustainable projects and value-added services. Our track record is providing high-quality facilities for clients. Our strong financial base put us in a unique position to capitalize on the demand for the industrial growth market of Mexico. We are excited about our growth opportunities for the second half and will keep you updated on our progress. Thank you all. I will now open the floor to questions and answers. Operator, could you please make us ready to answer any question?
Thank you. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from Ariel Amar with ITAU BBA. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning, all. Thank you for the conference call, and congratulations on the results. I have two questions. The first is regarding basically vacancy. Aside from the opportunity cost of not having the rent, obviously, how heavy is the carry of a vacant building for you guys? Especially now that you have, I mean, you're obviously delivering a lot of inventory building and you're going to have to carry it for a while until you lease it. I'd just like to understand a little bit in more detail. What is, for example, the cost per square meter per month of having a vacant building, just so I can model it better and understand it a little better as well? That would be my first question. My second question is regarding your debt renegotiation plans. If I were to guess and taking into consideration the company's profile, I would say you want to go for a long-term fixed-rate debt, which would most probably qualify as a bond. Could you comment on that? I mean, is that what you're thinking about? You obviously, how are you going to, are you actually planning to renew the GE debt? How are you going about the renewal of the debt that expires in 2016? Thank you very much.
Let me first answer the second question, and then we'll tackle the first one. The second question, look, debt renegotiation, they change our debtor. I don't know if you noticed, but GE stepped out of the business. Now our debtor is Blackstone. And look, basically what we're going to do is we're going to access either the private debt markets or the public debt markets sometime in the last quarter or first quarter next year. We're gonna basically issue debt and pay up the outstanding balance of the current debt. Part of the reason of raising the $50 million on February this year was just to assure us that we had alternative sources of funding from the private debt markets that operate in Mexico in dollars. And given the success of that offering, I don't foresee any problem if we were to issue private debt with a property collateral. However, as we have talked in the past, Ariel, I believe that Vesta is uniquely and is very well positioned to issue bonds in the public market. I think that our asset quality is second to none. I really believe that the profile of maturities on our leases, the quality of our portfolio, I won't hesitate to issue public debt if the conditions of the market and the prices of such a debt structure is more convenient for the company. So I don't foresee any problem in renegotiating and rolling over that debt with the best available structure in the best market that is convenient for the company. No. For the first question, Lorenzo, our CEO is gonna answer you.
Thank you very much, Ariel, for your questions, and this gives us also an opportunity to give more clarity on terms of our operations. The way we see our occupancy or our vacancy is it's really what we like to compare is the same stores vacancy, particularly because it could be sort of misleading the numbers that we give in terms of occupancy, basically because right immediately when we finish an inventory building, we put it on top of the whole portfolio. Therefore, it might seem that we have increased vacancy, but in reality is because we are adding new inventory buildings to our portfolio. In this case, and this quarter, for example, we increase in Tlaxcala and Querétaro, which we see it as an advantage to most of our competitors and also an advantage to capture and to attract new clients at the right time. So therefore, I believe that regarding your question on how we expect the rents to be done for the upcoming months, we have always been able to close at market rent, and we're gonna be still doing so. We want to achieve our returns, our hurdles, and that's why we're very cautious on, first of all, hitting our returns. Secondly, type of clients we want to have to our complete portfolio, and in the end, to really add value to our development strategy.
So, Ariel, at the end of the day, the way I think you should take into consideration our vacancy is every time we do an inventory building, we basically assume a six-month vacancy. We're very aggressive in the counting and in the counting of our inventory buildings. We don't delay the hiking of our GLA, so that's why we put an upfront. Our cost per square foot is still between $45 and $50 per square foot, and the rent depends on the rent per square foot on the markets that those inventory buildings were added. No, and we're confident that we will lease them up in the second half of this year.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for the answer. And don't worry, I know this is a very natural part of your operating business. It's a normal part. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Vanessa Quiroga with Credit Suisse. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for the call. My question is regarding your current views on the markets where you operate. If you can provide a little bit more color on why you decided to delay the completion of some of the developments that you have in your pipeline, and tell us whether you sense some kind of temporary oversupply in markets like Toluca, for example, that is experiencing some of these delays. Thanks.
Thank you, Vanessa. First of all, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the market dynamics. I believe that real estate fundamentals are stronger than ever. We have, in general terms, I like to speak more regionally. Talking, for example, about the north part of Mexico, which is for us Tijuana and Ciudad Juarez, it's incredible how much the vacancy has dropped in the last 4 years. It came from double digits, from approximately 12%, 13%, and today we're facing vacancies of 5%. This is 5% in Tijuana and 7% in Ciudad Juarez. This is for Class A buildings. This is very strong. On top of that, we are seeing that the market rents are increasing. So this gives us a great sentiment in order to be able to develop inventory buildings in the north part of Mexico. That's why we have started a strategy of developing in Tijuana and Ciudad Juarez, as you well know. Bajío region has had the highest absorption in whole Mexico. And vacancy rates, as you know, are below, close to, even below 5% in certain markets like Guanajuato, Aguascalientes, even San Luis Potosí. Therefore, we still see that the fundamentals are still very strong, and that's why our strategy of still developing inventory buildings in these markets. Now, Toluca, in this case, Toluca, our portfolio, I could say that besides the inventory buildings that we developed recently, it's almost fully leased. Fully leased, it's almost 100%. So, and the market is also very strong, particularly because of the logistics sector and automotive industry growing in Toluca. The demand is very strong. We have a very good pipeline, and the delays have nothing to do with the market. Actually, the delays, in particularly in these the two delays that we announced for the S5 and S6, it has more to do that we today have we are currently developing the Vesta Park 2, which is 6 buildings. We have already developed 4 of them, in which we are in the leasing process of 2 of them, the S1 and S2, and the S5 and S6. We were able to move a little bit the timing in order to have them ready for the end of the year, so that we can fill up the existing space in this semester while we are constructing the S5 and S6. But bear in mind that even that the buildings are in construction process and they will be finished by the end of the year, we are already marketing those buildings. Why? Because we're seeing a strong pipeline, and we see that we could be close to our future clients even today.
Thanks, Lorenzo. If I can pick up on that, would you be comfortable in guiding us for a shorter amount of time, a shorter period of time that S5 and S6 will remain vacant after completion?
The idea, every time we submit, the company is pretty conservative, Vanessa, as you know. Every time we complete an inventory building, we take 6 months to fill it up. Mind you, our policy of disclosure is extremely aggressive. That is, contrary to what most REITs in the U.S. do and some of our peers in Mexico, we do add the GLA of inventory buildings right away. We do that not only because it's fair to our shareholders to know how much buildings and GLA we have outstanding, but it is also a good measure to our internally to guide our management of our people and into the leasing process, which is the key part of our business. So this aggressiveness has a consequence. We're very open about the empty space. It helps our shareholders know what our vacancy is and what is the opportunity cost, as the previous question underlined. What we did on the S5, on these two buildings, is, look, we do have some inventory buildings in that park without tenants. It's imprudent to us to devote our resources in infrastructure, in developing the expansion of that park, rather than in continue full speed ahead on these two buildings. As Lauren pointed out, we're marketing those spaces already, and we're confident that once these buildings are delivered, it will take us the usual 6 months to fill them up.
Okay, thanks, Juan. Thanks, Lorenzo.
Our next question comes from Marimar Torreblanca with UBS. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the call. I have a question on how do you think we should expect the deployment of your money or your cash position and your leverage potential in terms of timing? After what you've seen in the recent months, what do you think we should be thinking of?
Look, basically, the company will continue to develop in a prudent fashion. So in terms of cash conversion into buildings, we will continue to develop as we see our vacancy rate drops. Just to point out, Marimar, in the third quarter last year, occupancy was above 90% overall for the company. That's why we started all of these inventory buildings build-up. We reacted to the strong demand in our properties. Today, as we see a vacancy rate, overall vacancy rate of the company of 14%, we will be prudent and slow down a bit our conversion of cash into buildings. Bear in mind that our same store vacancy is very attractive and is clearly under control. So we will balance these two stances of prudent developing and control of vacancy. It doesn't help the company a lot to develop buildings if we already have current buildings in the markets that we operate. So we're prudent in that respect. In terms of leveraging the balance sheet, first of all, we need to tackle the debt renegotiation, the debt rollover. And then in the next 24 months, we will access the debt markets to increase leverage as our cash drops below $175 million, somewhere around there. Given the our pace of investments, then we will begin to lever the company appropriately, no?
Okay, and what do you think are the chances that we see a new build-to-suit project like the Nissan Park you have? Do you think that we're, or have you been negotiations that suggest that in the next 6 to 12 months you should be seeing projects of this kind?
I believe, as I say, I think that the market fundamentals are very strong. There is a strong pipeline coming, particularly from the automotive industry, and there's a strong pipeline also from the aerospace industry. So therefore, we're always marketing not only our inventory buildings, but also build-to-suit projects and also park-to-suit projects. So that's the line of our business, and I believe that I think some of these projects take a lot of time sometimes. We're currently attending this strong pipeline, and therefore I think we're pretty much in line to what we have been doing in the past and what we are going to be looking forward. So as long as we see a strong pipeline, I think that our business is going to be working and it's going to be done as usual.
Okay, thank you.
Gracias.
Our next question comes from Adrian Huerta with JP Morgan. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Hi, Juan and Lorenzo. Thank you for the call. My first question is, what is the level of GLA that you're expecting to open or to have it ready for lease in the second half of 15 and the GLA for 2016? And is some of that or is already leased? And the second question, somewhat related to that one, is at what point would you slow down construction of new GLA in terms of overall occupancy? I mean, you're already closer to 15. You're opening even more in the second half, and if it's not rented out, I mean, where could we see the overall vacancy peaking in a worst case scenario before you slow down?
Adrián, nice to see you and to hear from you. We're very open about our construction and development pipeline. So we will end the year somewhere in the 19 million and a half square feet. There we do have some inventory buildings coming online on the second half. We do have a strong pipeline of leasing. Clients have slow down the closing of leases. It is taking us a little bit longer to close the leases, but the pipeline has not weakened. So we will continue to guide you that saying that it takes us 6 months to lease the buildings. Now, as I have been answering, it doesn't help the company to have several inventory buildings on the same market. It doesn't add value to our shareholders. In Vesta, we grow accretively. It doesn't add any value to my company to have too many inventory buildings, more than one per market. It really doesn't. So we growth plan should be dynamic and should reflect our ability to lease in the markets we operate. I think that 15% vacancy with our aggressive reporting on inventories completion dates, it should be peaked, and that is what that's the way our investment committee is managing the company. We need to lease up these spaces, and then we will resume growth again. 1 year ago, 8% overall vacancy. Today, 15, because we got ready to continue our expansion. When the 15 drops to 12-ish, 11-ish, we will continue to build up. And this is dynamic, and this is the way we operate. We put prudency over growth all the time.
I want to thank you so much for the answer. And a second question, you guys have a lot of experience through different cycles in this industry. Given your experience in the past, what has been the impact of a drastic move on the FX, on the peso, especially on rents? Because on one hand, obviously, it becomes more attractive for U.S. companies to come to Mexico. But then on the other hand, given that not all industrial assets are dollarized, I mean, there has to be some type of a pressure regarding rental prices denominated in U.S. dollars. I guess with the small movements on the FX, that doesn't happen. But with larger ones, I wonder what happens.
This is an excellent question, and I'm happy you bring it up because it really allows us to shine, quite frankly. Please look at our balance sheet and look at our accounts receivable. They haven't moved. Isn't it amazing that the peso has gone through basically a 20% devaluation and our clients are able to meet rent payments? That's picking good clients, and that's really managing the credit process at Vesta, no? Let me put this into perspective. When the real estate market crashed in the beginning of the 2010 period, there was also a very strong foreign exchange movement. At that time, we did see a lot of pressure on rents. That is, not only our accounts receivable grew, some of our clients went bankrupt, some of our extraordinary clients ask for rent relief, which it is not the case right now. And it was a challenging period for a real estate developer. I contrast that with the current situation. The peso has weakened significantly. We have a strong client demand in our pipeline. We don't have rental pressure because there's not a lot of vacancy in the markets we operate. And as long as we continue to pick up good clients, do long-term leases, and really worry about the credit rating, as I keep telling of all our meetings, concern number one of my investment committee is do business with good clients. Don't do business with lousy clients, because when the volatility comes to markets, it's really the good clients that let you sleep well at night. And I think that's what you're seeing in our balance sheet, no? So on the markets we operate, Toluca and Bajío, we have a strong demand, and we continue to market our buildings in dollars at the ongoing market rate, which is not dropping. The same can be said for the markets we operate in the north. The same can be said in Toluca. And so we just move ahead, no?
I guess that's a very good example. And I guess the biggest difference is that in that crisis, growth in the U.S. came down significantly, which is not the case this time that we're seeing the currency depreciating. So, no?
Exactly. The growth in the U.S. Is really helping our side of the Mexican economy, which is manufacturing-based. And that allows us to keep our pipeline strong, that allows us to keep our pricing solid, and our companies meeting their financial commitments, no? Our client.
Yeah. Yeah, but I guess overall rental prices, on average, considering that you have a certain percentage of your leases denominated in pesos, the average number in U.S. dollars will be coming down a bit.
Well, of course. I mean, part of the effect of the peso weakening. Of course, we do have 25% of our leases denominated in pesos, and the peso value has shrunk in our dollar accounting. So, and that one we didn't foresee at the beginning of the year. So part of the reason that we're 14.4 against 14.5 is that, well, my leases from my peso client are not really helping me, are they, no? But again, that's an externality, that a volatile externality that the company cannot foresee. What we can control is good clients. What we can control is leasing pace. What we can control is looking for a strong pipeline, and those things we are under control.
Perfect, Juan. Thank you so much. Always good talking to you.
Same here.
Our next question comes from Ivan Enriquez with HSBC. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Hello, Lorenzo, Juan, Aniga. Congratulations on the result. And my question has to do with we saw this margin expansion, EBITDA margin expansion, basically on the back of a reduction of 23.4% in administrative expenses. And this was basically due to management. You said that management achieving some targets. Can you please elaborate a little bit more on what are these targets and give us more color on these delays and the targets?
Absolutely. And again, I think this is a very good question, and I'm very happy that all of you analysts keep us sharp. Look, our board decided to tie the compensation scheme for management to the total return that we deliver to our shareholders. Vesta is unique in Mexico in that respect, not only in the real estate industry, but in any public company. And the concept of that is first comes the shareholder and then comes the management. And we're unique in that. So if the shareholder has a good return, management should be compensated, a good measurable return. And the measure is total return, dividend plus stock appreciation. On that scale, Vesta performance since December 31st of 2014 has not been stellar. And we are concerned, not only because it is our duty to excel in providing results to our board and to our shareholders, but because it bites on management compensation. And so what we do is we mark to market the management compensation on a quarterly basis. This week's board, the board is thinking about if we should mark to market our management compensations on a quarterly basis, because we throw you off. Last quarter we were basically at target, and this quarter we're very well below target, and that puts volatility in my admin costs, and it prompts all of you analysts and shareholders to see what's going on. So we may want to revisit that issue on how to during the year how to express our admin costs. But for the time being, they were mark to market, Because total returns were not even good, they were very bad, therefore management compensation, and we're talking about 15 employees out of 40. So management compensation tied to shareholder results cuts deep into the compensation of most of the top managers and let me reiterate, all of the top managers and a fourth of our middle managers. So look, that's why our admin costs were down, no? So please take a look in the note in the financial statements, and you will see the reserves we created last quarter vis-a-vis the reserves we created this quarter, and it will be self-evident how accounting for compensation runs into the company's books, no?
Okay, thanks, Juan. I certainly understand this total return based compensation, but my concern is that how can we isolate the management execution, let's say, and also the impact that the share price can have due to other stuff like in the perception of a higher interest rate? Because not only you, but also the Fibra's asset class has clearly underperformed, but it's basically has some explanation on the interest rate concern. But here you are hurting or not necessarily doing a bad management execution, and you are certainly reducing the compensation. No, it's
well. Look, there's two sides of the same coin. They are two sides of the same coin. I believe that the performance management-wise of the management of the company, sorry for the reiteration, is very good. I think that we have had management-wise a good first half of the year. There's some spots that we should concentrate. Leasing clearly is one of them. We have to close leases appropriately. But besides that, I think that we have done a pretty good job. The share price doesn't reflect that. And the alignment of interest dictates that our compensation suffers. All of us, all of these 15 people understand that, and that only makes us work better. So in that respect, I'm very happy about what's happening. Now, you also touch in another question, which is the impact of interest rates. And there, I have a disagreement with the market. I believe that given the type of company we are, a developer in a dynamic sector of Mexico, in the right place of the Mexican economy, export-led growth, given that the U.S. is growing substantially and therefore they have to hike rates to keep their economy healthy, I think that the impact of interest rates is not that a strong Vesta. I have no comment on my peers. You're the better judges of that. But in the case of Vesta, I don't think that interest rates should have a huge impact on us. Not only because the base business, the real business, remains strong, but also because we will access the debt capital markets, as I pointed out, for a 10-year transaction in the coming first quarter of next year, and so the impact of interest rates in the particular case of Vesta should be pretty well minor, no?
Mm-hmm. No. I completely agree with that discrepancy. So I just wanted to point that out. And finally, in terms of the guidance, do you have any NOI guidance or revenue for the end of 2015?
For 2015, we already gave it, no? Growth. Certainly we're 0.1% below guidance in revenues, and a lot of it has to do with exchange rate fluctuation on like 25% of peso leases, and of course on our need to close up leasing of vacant space. In terms of NOI and EBITDA, I think that we're meeting the margins more than comfortably, and I took into account the expected level of compensation of management. So there's nothing that prompts me to say that I'm not going to meet guidance on those metrics. In fact, I am quite comfortable with the growth of FFO, and which is really what we at the end of the day we follow the cash, no? And FFO is a good measure of our cash generating ability, no?
Okay, thanks so much, and congratulations again on the GLA growth on a yearly basis, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Francisco Suarez with Scotiabank. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Francisco Suarez from Scotiabank. My question relates with your guidance on your FFO margin. Currently, it is 56%, your FFO margin. For sure, you deserve lower funding costs, and we are eager to see that improvement next year once that you are able to refinance your current debt. But assuming that the overall cost of funding remains flat, I'm sorry to bug you with another question related with absorption rates on spec property, but what may happen to overall FFO margins if vacancies are still high on spec property going forward? What can you guide us with? Any help would be very, very much appreciated. Thank you.
Okay, let me pay attention to one of your questions. Lauren, pay attention to one of your questions, and I think I missed one. So let's answer, and you remind us what we're missing, because we don't want to left anything on the table. First, Francisco, nice to talk to you. We do not give guidance on FFO. Please remember that. We do give guidance on EBITDA. But I will be very open about FFO. FFO came in strong, basically as expected, as we expected internally. And the kicker on this quarter, on this first half of the year, I should say, is that taxes came out, cash taxes came out significantly lower. Please be remembered that in the case of Vesta, and I think that we should talk about an adjusted FFO because we do pay taxes, and tax cash outflows are could be considerable, but because of the foreign exchange movement, we're not going to pay much of a tax bill in the coming years if the peso remains at the levels they are today. Now, given the niceties of the tax implementation in the interim of the years, we do have to pay some taxes during the years that at the final tax tally most probably will be adjusted. But again, taxes we're not paying, so FFO benefited greatly from that. Please remember that on FFO, all of these extraneous items like management compensation, which it is not cash flow, is not taken into account. That's why we like FFO. Foreign exchange fluctuations, the appreciation of the value of our property, all of these things come out. We follow the cash. Cash is very strong, but take into a look on taxes. If I were a FIBRA, certainly the FIBRA don't pay taxes, but to make numbers comparable, you have to make a guess of how much taxes shareholders pay on their FIBRA holdings to make the FFO comparables, no? Or conversely, add back the taxes to my FFO to make us comparable, whatever suits your need. So that's one question. The other question is on absorption. What perhaps Lauren can comment on absorption rate, and then you remind me with the question that I forgot.
Yeah, perhaps we can actually talk on your EBITDA margin guidance, because my guess here is that if the current absorption rates actually deteriorate, and for some reason your overall vacancies on spec property continue to deteriorate in the future, if that actually happens, does that may affect your overall EBITDA margins, and what would be your guidance on EBITDA margin for this year?
Well, okay. Look, we're not changing guidance at this point because we see a very strong pipeline, Francisco. Our level of concern is that because we account for development immediately after the building is developed, we don't hide when our properties are going to impact our GLA, and we use that as a metric internally, and we share that metric with you. That's why the vacancy came up. We still, and we strongly believe that we will be able to lease our buildings within our expected rate. And therefore, I don't, given the pipeline that we have, we will not change guidance during the second quarter. If we believe that, that if we would were to see the pipeline decreasing, then we will talk about changing guidance. The guidance will hit our revenue line, and therefore the rest of the metrics will be affected. No, but so far I'm confident in our ability to reach these targets. No, absorption rate, the market absorption rate remains strong. Customers are taking longer to close the leases. Was that due to volatility in the markets globally? Was that due because of elections? Was that due? I do not know. But we're talking to a lot of clients. New clients pop up very often, and we follow them on the suspect level to the closing level. And we remain confident on our ability to close and on the pipeline that we're seeing coming up from the regions we operate.
Thank you very much, James. Take care.
Our next question comes from Alvaro Garcia with BTG International. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the call. Most of my questions have been answered, but I was wondering if you could drill down maybe a little more on S1 and S2 in Toluca. Maybe you can give exact examples, or I don't know how much color you could give exactly, but maybe has it not been leased maybe because you're looking for a tenant with a longer time frame, or are you looking for a particular type of tenant there? Any sort of color with regard to S1 and S2 would be greatly appreciated.
Absolutely, Alvaro. Let me tell you, first of all, I'd like to take the opportunity also to share how the market is moving again in Toluca. In Toluca, we have approximately 4 million square feet of leasable leased area, and it's actually fully leased. So we are very confident that we need more space in order to be able to rent and to have more of our existing customers. S1 and S2, those are buildings very similar to the S3 building. It's approximately 150,000 square feet each. And let me tell you, the S3, in this last quarter, we leased it up with two existing clients. One of them being Ryder Logistics, which was already our client in Querétaro and in Toluca, so we are repeating business with them. The other one is Recall, who is doing business processing outsourcing, and we lease already a property with them in Toluca. So we're getting long-term leases. I'm talking even in some cases even above 10 years. So we are, first of all, we are growing with our existing client base. And we're leasing up our only two available buildings, and therefore we want to be very careful on trying to maintain the same kind of clients and the same kind of leases looking forward. So as long as we are marketing the existing two buildings, and therefore we're very confident that we are going to be very successful in the S2, S3, S1, S2, and also in the S5 and S6 that we are currently under construction. Another important item about Toluca is that today, if you go to Toluca and try to find land to develop an industrial building, it's very scarce land, and prices have increased dramatically. So So that gives us a big advantage on the land that we acquired some years ago and that we're currently developing.
Great, that was a very complete answer. Just one last thing. I was wondering if you could provide a little color on the plot of land you bought in Aguascalientes as well. I noticed that was the biggest jump in your land reserve this quarter. Any sort of color there would be greatly appreciated as well. Maybe with regard to the land prices in Bajío relative to what you mentioned now about how land prices in Toluca have increased. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
No, sure. About Aguascalientes, as you know, we have the DSP park of Nissan. Nissan is will start the construction of a new manufacturing facility with together with Infiniti and Daimler, Mercedes-Benz, right next to the DSP park. And therefore, we believe that demand is going to come very strong in the upcoming years. Therefore, we are taking advantage of a market that we already know and we are very well established. And we are buying land before we start up marketing more buildings. And we are doing it in the proximity of the Nissan park because we know that the demand is going to come in this same area. So that's why for us it's very important to secure the land in advance so that we are in a more advantageous position in the upcoming future.
And regarding land prices,
regarding land prices, that's why for us it's key to buy land. And we are acquiring land in Aguascalientes. Actually, we're going to still be acquiring land in Aguascalientes. And we are going to still be buying land in the Bajío because we believe that securing land is going to give us a big ability to market buildings. And we know that if we buy land today, we can even get it at a discount prices to what we see the trend is going in the upcoming future. Land prices have also increased in the Bajío region. That's why tying up land for us is going to be key in order to be able to get to the growth plan that we have in those regions.
And again, from an overall perspective of the balance sheet, land reserve for our more than $1 billion portfolio of real estate properties should not be higher than $90-$100 million, not more than that. We're currently in 66. So we're prudently buying where we think demand will be important.
Perfect. Lorenzo, Juan, thank you very much.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Javier Gayol with GMB. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, guys. Good evening. Congrats on your results. My question goes on the development side. I mean, with this lower peso, do you think that, I mean, your investment showed in your press release for your ongoing project should lower? I mean, because you are showing it in U.S. figures. And if the case, you're going to benefit in terms of development cap rate or something like that? In these projects going forward, and the second question is with this project that you pushed forward, I mean, is there any kind of penalty that you have to pay to your general contractors or something like that?
Okay, both very good questions. Let me start by the second one because it's an easier one. No, we didn't have any penalty from our contractors. They are working very hard on our Toluca Park 2, providing the infrastructure. So it was a matter of redirecting them to secure the infrastructure of the park rather than erecting the walls of the buildings. It was nothing more dramatic than that. It was, hey, don't erect the walls, continue to do the infrastructure. It was just that. So there is no penalty. On the first question is very sharp. Construction costs haven't increased, and our construction costs are denominated in pesos.
Of course, at the end of the day, what we are, and that is the reason why we have a peso balance on our checking accounts. It is because pesos, cash of Vesta, are really buildings for the future. As construction costs have not risen, because the devaluation is not trickling down to inflation. Steel, cement, the basic raw materials of our buildings are not rising in price. We keep our monies in pesos to match those expenses. When we approve these buildings in the investment committee, we committed to a certain hurdle return. On levered, if we express the hurdle return, which is an IRR type of analysis, if we express that return in terms of cap rate, we committed to 11-ish for inventory buildings, and we're confident that we will achieve that. As our revenues are mostly denominated in dollars, the appraisal process values our buildings in dollars. These inventory buildings are being valued as soon as we start construction in dollar terms. And the mismatch between our valuation of the appraisal and our commitment of the investment committee and the peso cost give us leverage on the pricing stance. Mind you, it's the same leverage that any other developer in the area has. We're basically, in that regard, comparable. So at the end of the day, the devaluation does not allow us to price more aggressively, but certainly we keep an eye on that. In the appraisal process, buildings that have rents in pesos are appraised in pesos, and we adjust the appraisal process to take into account that. Again, if you go to note to the note on the appraisal, you will clearly see the impact of the peso dollar fluctuation for those buildings that are being leased in pesos. But the appraiser also considers that the buildings that are under development will have dollar rents, because that's the currency where the majority of our rents are denominated. I don't know if I covered what you wanted to listen to in the question.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Cecilia Jimenez with Santander. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks. Hi, guys. Good morning. Thanks for the call. I have two questions. First could be about Innovesting. I would like to know if this could have an impact, an implication, on the maintenance CapEx investments you are doing today and going forward. That would be my first question, in the properties, I mean.
Look, at the end of the day, thank you for the question, Cecilia. Nice to hear from you. In Vesta, we take innovation very seriously. We really want to put very hard marks on how to guide the company. That's why we changed our compensation procedure, and I think it's very innovative. We restructure the company. And we're continuously trying to be very innovating in the way we do business. Yes, one of the things that our task force that we have set up in the company focus on is how to achieve how to keep maintenance costs as small as possible. And I think we're doing that. I think that that's one of the things that we're focusing on. Part of the reason that we favor concrete buildings is because buildings tend to last for a long time, and concrete buildings are very easy to maintain and don't demand so much maintenance capex from us or from our clients. And that's part of having the newest building portfolio in industrial portfolio in Mexico, no? But certainly, innovating means that we're trying to reinvent ourselves every year. It's really having as a goal to be best in class, not only in the way we do business, in the way we treat our clients, in the way we select the clients, and in the way we report to all of you, but also in the way we manage the portfolio. And we have set up different leaders in each of these fields to try to innovate and to try to look at how should things be done in the best of fashions, no? And that is what innovation means to us in the company.
Okay, but we should see the same, let's say, percentage of CapEx, maintained CapEx, of what we have seen so far. We shouldn't see that increasing, or should we?
No. Maintenance CapEx, what we do in our projections is when leases mature, we assume that we have to invest around 50 cents per square foot. If you average that out in our portfolio, it comes to around 10 cents per square foot per year, somewhere around there, sometimes less, sometimes more, but that's a good working figure of maintenance CapEx. And obviously, part of our focus is to have to optimize that and how to minimize those impacts with a lot of corrective measures, with a lot of the way we should do business on the ground. It may be very intuitive things that we just have to focus on doing, cleaning the roofing, painting the buildings, be on top of our customers so that they do they're part of the equation as quickly as possible and as scheduled. All of those little things are really add up to a low maintenance capex, no? And but again, the way we forecast our numbers is as I just mentioned.
Okay, thanks, Juan. And then the second question is regarding prices, and I wanted to see if you see stable prices in dollar terms, or if you have seen so far negotiations with your tenants trying to lower the price due to the FX appreciation so far, or do you see them stable?
No. It's the prices. In the markets that we operate, prices are quite well bid, I should say, using a financial expression. There is not a lot of empty space in the Toluca region, so prices are being maintained. There's high competition. Some of our clients or some of our potential clients are naturally peso-based clients. And what we do is we look at our alternative clients that are based in dollars. Unfortunately, at 16 pesos per dollar, that makes us challenging to get peso clients. But that's the color I would give you. My dollar clients, we have competitive prices. Dollar-based clients are well bid, and prices are not coming down. The effect is that if 12 months ago I was able to seek out high-quality customers that are peso-based, maybe because they are local logistic operations, right now it's a hell of a lot more challenging to go after them, and that's a reality. You know, that is a real effect of the devaluation, I guess.
I think that for the clients that are dollar-based clients, it hasn't had any impact. I think that the rental prices move more correlated to the supply and demand, and we believe that certain markets' supply is low, therefore demand is stronger, and therefore we can maintain the same prices in U.S. dollar, particularly for manufacturing companies.
Perfect. That's great color. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cecilia. Thank you for the question. Really, really good question.
Thanks.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to Mr. Bejo for any closing remarks.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you all for participating in Vesta's second quarter 2015 conference call. We look forward to speaking with you again when we release our third quarter results. If you have any questions in the meantime, please do not hesitate to contact our Investor Relations Department, Iga Volska. Thank you and have a great day.
This concludes today's teleconference. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your lines at this time.